everyone, and welcome back to No Fate, the Terminator podcast, where we cover any and all things Terminator. I'm your host, Michael John Petty, and with me is my resistance fighting co-host, Tanner Radwick. I guess you're not fighting from the resistance, you're a part of the resistance, but you are a fighter, not fighting.
Yes. Which side am I on?
You're actually a cyborg.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guys, we're excited about today's episode. Today's episode is going to be the last episode of this season that we cover an episode of the Sarah Connor Chronicles. We're going to go on a little break due to that special announcement that Tanner made last week. If you do not know what we're talking about, go back and listen to the end of our last episode. But we're very excited, obviously. But we're going to round out our season here talking about the episode Ourselves Alone, which is kind of a game changer. It's a turning point episode for the Sarah Connor Chronicles leading into the final five episodes of the show. And it's going to be a game changer episode for us as well. But before we get into that, we are going to talk about the recent Super Bracket Bros appearance by yours truly, where Jay, Eli, and myself debated whether or not the T-800 from Terminator 2 or the Punisher from the Netflix Daredevil and Punisher series would win in a death match. Tanner, I want your thoughts on this episode, obviously more than I want my own because I was there. But
sure.
But what did you think of the fight? Did you think it turned out the way you thought it would? What were your immediate thoughts? Were there any points that you were like, oh, that makes sense. Maybe that person would win. What do you think?
Right. Well, and you and I had talked about this fight before the episode, before you recorded the episode. So a lot of your commentary was pretty spot on for me also. I was not able to appear on this episode because my wife and I were both sick during that time. Just couldn't be there for it. Had a great time on the first one, but had a lot of fun listening to Michael on this episode. Please do go check it out. My thoughts on this one. So for a little background information, they put these characters to fight on. It was a Half-Life map, wasn't it?
I think so.
I have not played that map myself. I played a little bit of Half-Life, but I haven't beat it. But it was like this. Or I'm sure someone in our audience will know for sure. It was one of those maps. There was zombies, which I didn't anticipate being in there with the fighters, with the Punisher and the T-800s. That was interesting.
Yeah.
It was a map with like a kind of like a creepy town. It looked like you could kind of maybe get on the rooftops, and there was exploding barrels, which I also didn't know about.
Apparently a lot of traps.
Yeah, a lot of traps and things. So there was more environmental obstacles and things at both fighters' disposal, more than I knew about. So that was interesting. And thinking about the zombies roaming the map with those two characters was really interesting as well. It's easy to picture the Punisher, how he would react around zombies. I mean, we have enough media with similar human characters with zombies, right? Mm-hmm. But we've never really seen the Terminator with zombies and how it would react to zombies, how zombies would react to it. What would that look like? You know, they were bringing up how many zombies would it take to swarm him to make him immobile, right? Which was
right.
Funny to picture and imagine. But of course, ultimately, zombies are not a threat to a Terminator. I mean, they can bite the skin all they want, but that infection is not going to do anything to that machine underneath. Whereas, of course, the Punisher, it would. I think you guys did a good chance of giving the Punisher every opportunity in this fight to try and figure out a way that he could win. But ultimately, I agreed with your guys' assessment. It just didn't seem like there was a way to make that happen. As resourceful and as determined as that character is, it's still a T-800, you know? So not to give anything away, go watch the episode. It's a really fun journey. It's a fun ride. Please listen to the whole thing because it's a lot of fun. And you know, that you guys cover a lot that I didn't touch on. So it's worth a listen.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a good time. I think it definitely went the way I thought it'd go. I know Jay asked me that on the episode, and I would agree with that statement again here. Before we kind of changed our answers and backtracked when you and I did the Sarah Connor versus Terminator one, but here I don't know. It just makes the most sense given the map, given the obstacles, given the zombies, given everything that was thrown at these characters. I definitely think that, you know, there's just no way the Terminator doesn't come out on top. Frank Castle's just flesh and blood, and well, the Terminator's that and so much more. So.
Makes sense. It was a good time. I hope that we can return for a future episode here.
Yes. Well, hopefully the T-800 can win again and continue on at the tournament. Let's see him get to the end.
Yeah. We
Well,
now we don't know yet who the T-800 is going to fight next, do we? So there has to be another match, right?
I think so. By the time this comes out, that probably won't be true. I'm sure we'll know.
Yeah. Right.
But yes.
Excited to see what the next match is.
Me too. But special thanks again to Jay and Eli, Super Bracket Bros. We really appreciate you guys. We love what you guys are doing. It's so much fun, and it's been a joy to be a part of. So thank you for inviting us on again, and we hope to see another invite soon if the T-800 continues forward. So with that said, we're going to switch gears into our episode of Terminator: The Sarah Connor Chronicles. This week it is episode 17 of season 2, entitled Ourselves Alone. While Derek does surveillance on a lawyer he suspects may be connected to Skynet, Sarah and Cameron begin to have doubts about Riley. So, this one has a 7.6 out of 10 on IMDb, which is, I think, a fair assessment. I'd probably give it a little higher, more like a 7.8 or 9, just because I think that this episode is really fantastic. I'd maybe even go a full 8.
Yeah.
It's much better than I remembered it being. I think because I went into the episode kind of being unsure of where we were in the series. As far, not as far as, you know, where the last few episodes have been, but is this episode the episode I think it is? And it was. And I was like, ah, it's just as powerful as I remember it being.
Yeah.
And
It's a great episode. I would feel comfortable giving this an 8 myself. The tension, I think John has some really great moments. Riley has some really great freak out moments. I think everybody shines in this episode. And what's great is we get a good spotlight on each character also, I feel like. The last few have been really heavy with one character, and then the others are kind of in the background. But this one, I feel like everyone is really involved, and everyone is really every scene is very intense, you know. It feels like things could kind of crumble at any moment. People's lives feel like they're in danger. It's very intense. Their life could really come unraveled, and they'd have to do some big changes here, you know. So I like it a lot. It keeps me on edge, in a way that the last few have not done as well. I think it raises some interesting questions, and it also sets up the next episode terrifically, which I'm excited to talk about.
No, I agree. Well, the next episode, which is the first of a two-parter, well, we'll talk about it when we talk about that. It's
Yeah.
we'll talk about that upon our return.
Not to get ahead of
No, not to
ourselves,
get ahead of
but
ourselves at all. I think what makes this episode really work is it's kind of focused on everybody. You know, everybody kind of gets their due. It's not a Sarah focused episode. It's not a Riley focused episode. It's not a John focused episode or a Cameron focused episode. It's everybody plays their part, and everyone gets to play their part pretty equally for the most part. Yeah, some people have more important parts than others, and there's other characters like Ellison and Weaver who we don't even see, but that doesn't matter. You know, everyone who is in this episode is in it for a reason, and every scene feels very intentional. And every character interaction feels very intentional. Like, even just the moment between Sarah and Riley when Sarah's scrubbing the floor near the beginning and getting all that blood out. And Riley's just so uncomfortable, and Sarah's just as uncomfortable, and Riley offers to go get more of the chemicals, and instead of bringing it to her, she can't do it. She leaves it outside. And it's such a interesting moment, but I think it reveals something about Riley. And, well, I think it reveals a lot about Riley. I think Riley really just wanted this nice, cushy life in this paradise, and so she was willing to follow Jesse anywhere to get it. I also think Riley, for as much as she puts herself through, is a little bit of a coward, and I think that's showing that up front. I think it's foreshadowing the fact that she will not tell John later on where she's from and who she is and why she's here. Which I think is, you know, maybe that's a little bit of a double standard, because I don't think that she's fully a coward. Like, she does attack Jesse at the end of the episode and try and kill her, you know? But there's, but emotionally, I think she's so emotionally closed off that she doesn't really know how to deal with that, especially in context of the betrayal. And so it's very interesting. Especially the way that they portray her, that Levin Rambin plays her.
But I think she had such a hard time, too, because of the culture shock is affecting her more than someone like Derek or someone like Jesse, who are both old enough to remember a time before the apocalypse, right? The fallout?
Yes.
Where she's young enough to where this is all new to her, and it's and having to be thrust into this role of getting close to someone and lying. When you consider where she's from and what she's experienced in life, she does a really good job. But it's a lot for her, understandably.
Absolutely. I think, too, Riley is, she thinks she has the upper hand in a lot of ways. She thinks she knows all this information about the Connors. She thinks she understands what Cameron is. She thinks, you know, she knows all this stuff. And she does. You know, there's a point in which she does know these things. And that does give her an upper hand, because they don't know that she knows. Until they do. And the moment they learn that she knows and is keeping it from them, you know, John and Cameron especially, she melts. And she doesn't know how to handle it, and she cracks under the pressure. And I think part of that too is recognizing that she is being set up as a sacrificial lamb. You know, there is that element where she's realizing, oh, I'm supposed to die. And it's finally clicking for her. And it definitely clicks for her, I'd say, before it clicks for us as the audience. But which is smart. I mean, it just goes to show how smart Jesse is. I mean, Jesse is incredibly intelligent. And you see that in the way that she interacts with Sarah and changes her accent so that it can't trace back to her, and so that she can't ask Derek about it, who could trace it back to her. You know, I mean, she takes every precaution she can for the most part, and it shows. And the fact that Riley figures it out is almost equally as impressive. You know, for all of her flaws, she's not a moron.
You're right, right. It's very tragic. The whole thing is so tragic, because you see Riley's a very human character with her emotions and her outbursts. And so clearly she's just suffering through this, you know, and she holds it down a lot for John. But these moments that she has with Jesse again, where she is just breaking down, it's so tragic, and it makes her end really sad as well. Especially with how cold Jesse is also. I mean, she is
complete. I mean, like a machine.
Yeah, she really is. She's willing to do whatever it takes to get John away from Cameron, which makes you wonder how much more that she knows about her own future, which of course could be different than everyone else's future too. Right. So like how bad is it really in her version with John and Cameron? Because it might be worse than what ends up happening later, or John or Derek's future with John and Cameron. Like they touch on these different timelines once again in the in this show, in this episode. Derek is talking about, my date for Judgment Day was this date. What is your date? And she doesn't tell him, but it's obviously something different. And that conversation that they have is just really interesting in that they're having these different dates, which really means that Judgment Day could come at any time
Right.
in this current timeline, which is a scary thought.
Right. It's true. And yeah, it's very true. Well, I mean, when Derek went back in time and killed Andy Good was vital to the building of Skynet. And so, does that mean Skynet's activation got pushed back? Or because of the Triple H that came from that same timeline that Derek did, does it mean that it moved up? We don't know, and unfortunately, we'll never know. That's just, that's unfortunately the way the cookie crumbled with the show. But it's interesting how cool Derek is with the fact that she's not his Jessie, because I think he's trying really hard to still see her the way he wants to see her. And not recycognizing that this battle-hardened world that she came from, that was even more tragic and hard, it seemingly, than his, it made her a different person.
It did. And I think from Derek's point of view, he's very eager to have someone else from the future with him.
Yes.
Because he feels left out and just different than what John and Sarah and Cameron are, right?
Right.
Understandably, because he is from this future. And Cameron is as well, but he's not gonna talk to Cameron about it the
Right.
way he can talk to Jesse about it. So he likes having someone else who can back him up on these side missions that he's doing, and someone he can trust and go to. So he's willing to overlook, I think, a lot of Jessie's obvious flaws and like the concerning things that she does. And even when she's flat out telling him, "I don't think I can do this," and he's just like blowing it off, saying, "You're doing this," you know?
Yeah. Which is super like what the heck, Derek? Are you like are you even listening? She said she's
Yeah.
not. She said she isn't coming.
And then he's surprised when she's not there.
Right. Right. And I think oh boy. I love Derek. I really do, but it's episodes like these that I'm like, "Oh, Derek, what are you doing, man?" Like we couldn't have found something a little more interesting for you to do. And that's one thing too that I think really bothers me about Jesse, because it feels inconsistent, is this idea that she doesn't care about stopping Skynet. She only cares about keeping John away from Cameron. That just doesn't seem right to me. And I know that, I know the next few episodes are going to get into that. I know the next few episodes are going to kind of explore a little more about her future and where she came from and why she hates this relationship that exists between the two of them. But as someone who's from a post-apocalyptic future, wouldn't you want more than anything for that not to happen?
Maybe, unless she's accepted that Skynet is inevitable, as we've seen quoted before,
Sure.
and that in her timeline specifically, the most damning thing that can happen is this relationship between John and Cameron.
That's possible.
Could be.
Speaking of Cameron, I really love her arc in this episode. I feel like since Self-Made Man, which was pretty much focused on Cameron, we haven't really got a whole lot of her. And which is tragic because I think Summer Glau is an incredible actress. And I feel like that character has so much potential. And, you see a lot more of that in the final five episodes, I'd say. But this is where that really starts kicking into gear. And I really love this whole bit that she's broken and she knows she's broken. And I can't fix me, so you have to help me because it's nice to have help. But also, that didn't work. So now here's an explosive that's in my brain. Kill me if you need to kill me. It's just such an interesting lot. Each step is even more logical than the last in a lot of ways. And you can see the way that she is working through all that. You can also see her struggle with not killing Riley, because she's right. There was a time where that wouldn't have been a decision. That just would have been what happened. But now it's a decision. And is it a decision because she's damaged? Or is it a decision because she cares about John? Or is it a decision because she's learning and trying to follow John's orders and example in the process? I don't know. And I don't know if we're supposed to know.
Yeah.
Maybe it's all three.
It could be. And that's one of the great things about this show, is that it doesn't always give you all the answers. It leaves a lot of these things up for interpretation, especially with Cameron and what her intentions are. And they always plant kind of this background seed of like, ooh, can I trust her? She seems sincere, but also Jesse is really worried about her. Could this timeline be, is she manipulating John, you know?
Right.
There's always that sliver in your mind. And I think it's really interesting how they play with this idea of repairing the hand. Mm-hmm. And of course, we see in the first Terminator, that T-800 is able to work on its hand itself.
Yep.
Cameron kind of alludes to how she could have worked on it herself, but it's nice to have help, right? So, like, was she just waiting for John to offer so that she could include him and, like, become closer and have this bonding over it, right?
Or is she trying, as she says, to get him ahead of schedule so he's even more prepared because there's more threats?
Right. It could be. And, of course, she says this, he kind of is disappointed that she didn't melt all of the parts from the other Terminators. And she talks about how, well, future John told me not to, which makes sense. I mean, you can look at it both ways, right? Like, it would make sense for future John to say that if he knew that she was going to get damaged and he would need those parts.
Mm-hmm.
But also, could it be that she's just going to say future John said this anytime she needs a pass, right?
Right.
It could be that too. And it also could be somewhere in between, mm-hmm. you know?
I agree. I really like that the show, and they're not gray areas, but it doesn't make everything clear. You know, things are muddy sometimes, and it's not like a morally ambiguous thing. It's a, hey, you just don't have all the answers thing. And mm-hmm. I really like that. I like that everything isn't so clean cut, because it allows room for discussion like this. It allows room for interpretations of character and interpretations of character growth, or maybe regress. And I think that's where you can see something like this and be like, oh, Cameron's growing because she's learning, and she's learning to trust, and she's learning to, you know, help and include. But you could also see it as Cameron is degrading, you know, Cameron is breaking. Cameron knows that she needs help, and so she's manipulating to get that help. You know, I mean, there's just a lot of ways you could take it, and it's just really interesting. I really like the whole bit with her and the bird. I like that that continues. I like that at the end, John sees that there's another dead bird. It's ominous, and it's kind of scary, and it's like the implications of that are frightening. And I think in that moment, he's probably thankful she gave him a detonator, but also it makes him sad to have to use it.
Right. And that's for sure a different dead bird, right?
Yes. Well, it's a pigeon at the beginning, and it's a different bird entirely at the end.
That's what I was noticing also. I was like, is that a different bird?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's fun. Back to the chip thing also, her explosive in the chip, that was also a part that's like, is that a sincere gesture? Or is it also, is she using that manipulatively of like, I'm giving you the power to kill me? And like, that makes John feel a certain way in terms of, I don't want to have to be the one to kill you. Right.
Right.
Especially with his tragic experience, lowering his best friend T-800 into the lava also.
Right.
You know, that whole thing.
Which
also,
technically Sarah did, but.
Right. But traumatic for him.
Yeah.
And
I guess Cameron would know that.
You can also look at that in kind of a manipulative way also. Or like, is the explosive even there?
Right. I was thinking about that too. One thing I was thinking, when she shows him the detonator and shows him what button to press. I'm like, wow, that'd be so easy for anyone to just take and press. I'm like, why wouldn't you make it a sequence or a code or something?
What does this do? Yeah, I get
She falls to the ground, just lifeless.
that. I actually watching this, I forgot that Jesse comes as the counselor
Yeah, me too.
to meet with Sarah. That scene is so cool. And when John talks to Riley's foster dad and he mentions a counselor, I had no memory of like, oh, this is gonna be Jesse. Like Jesse came by to plant this, right? So when she's there and she ditches the Australian accent, it's so cool and that conversation is so great. She's clearly like jealous about Derek and using that to manipulate her own, what she wants and like being threatening, but also I'm giving you a pass here and like she has total control over Sarah because of this fake position that
Yeah.
she's made.
What's
It's
crazy
great.
is that fake position she makes actually gives her some real power because she gets child services involved and there's that whole bit. And, she's that lady isn't just some hired gun that Jesse sent in to freak the Connors out. That's a real government official. And now they have to potentially deal with that threat too. And it's not the first time, but it's not a great time.
Yeah, it's scary. And I was thinking about that also in terms of Jesse's not worried about like this could potentially like end them if it goes the wrong way and if they're not smart about it,
Right. She doesn't
she's kind
care.
of rolling the dice that it's gonna go the right way.
And maybe she's even hoping that it does. Maybe she's hoping that that added stress just causes more conflict between Sarah and Cameron and John and Cameron and Sarah and John. That's another thing. Speaking of Sarah and John, that scene where Sarah accuses John of telling Riley about who they are and the Terminators in the future, and John admitting that he didn't, just speaking plainly about that. I mean, so heartbreaking because she's like, I don't trust you. And, as speaking as the person who was kind of insane and probably shouldn't have been trusted fully for a few episodes there, you'd think that. And, I think too, this is coming off the heels of the last episode where Sarah and John in her dream state kind of made amends and they made things better and they were working together and then we find out it's not real. And so it just kind of adds insult to injury and kind of makes me dislike that last episode even more because I'm like, "Oh, why? What's the reason for this? They aren't in this place. They don't need to be in this place." And and that's the thing about John is he, yes, he will obscure the truth a little bit, but he doesn't flat out lie to his mom in that way. And the fact that she can't trust him is, it's like any teenager and parent conversation. It's like, well, I'm the adult and I can't trust you because you're a hormonal lying teenager. And he's like, no, I'm not. But he kind of is. It was a great scene. It was a really great
Well,
scene.
and also the truth is somewhere in between too, right? Which is common in those scenarios. And one of the things I kind of forgot how that part went when I was watching it in the moment, because when the step or I'm sorry, the foster father of Riley told Sarah that Riley had mentioned the bleached skulls and that sort of thing, and it kind of triggers off Sarah's thought process. In that moment, I kind of forgot how the episode went. In that moment, I thought that Sarah was putting together fully that Riley was actually from the future. I thought she put like all of it together. But then as she was talking to John about it, it clicked in my head before she even said anything that, oh no, she thinks that John had told her about this future and she was freaking out about it. So that was like a funny roller coaster that I had with this episode, but
But
so
wouldn't that be your first inclination that, oh, she's from the future or she knows something about it?
you would think, I mean, they've seen enough people come back that you would think it would trigger like, oh, she's from the future. What, why isn't she telling us? But I guess
Well, the real
maybe
twist would be if
because
Riley had been a Terminator, if she had been an infiltrator.
I mean, why waste your time, right? But like she could have killed John at any time at that point.
Well,
but
that's true. Unless there was another reason, you know?
Maybe she thought that she wasn't from the future because she was freaking out so much at the idea of the future.
Sure, which makes
Like
sense.
it might have been just like shocking to her, as opposed to keeping her cool since she's came back here and everything else. You know, Sarah doesn't know what her mission is or her purpose is, so.
Right. Also, Sarah wasn't there when she freaked out, so she didn't know the combination of words that she exactly used. You know, she knows about
Yeah.
the bleach skulls, she knows about that stuff, but she could have been saying that in any sort of context. Whereas when you hear Riley say something like, "You're all dead, you don't even know," blah, 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 it's speaking almost more from experience. Obviously, Sarah said those things having not experienced that, but talked with someone who had. And so maybe that's why she assumes that John said something.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that
That
makes
makes
sense.
sense. John's actions and emotions are it's so heavy in this
Oh,
episode.
yeah.
And I think it's really interesting how he's obviously torn up about this idea of like we have to do something about Riley. But he doesn't necessarily hide from that either, I feel like. He kind of confronts it in a very serious tone, even though he's so torn up about it also. You can see both sides of it. He's trying to take it seriously because he knows what the mission is and he knows how important that is. But you can also see him torn up inside, especially when Riley is freaked out with Cameron in the shack.
Yes. Yes.
But thinking about when Riley comes over and he comes from behind the fireplace to confront her about it after Sarah's talking to her, and then Cameron comes and makes it even more intense right before the social worker
Oh,
comes in.
yeah.
Like he's taking this very seriously in that moment, even though he doesn't want to.
Well, I think part of that too is I think John realizes he's been lied to.
Yeah.
You know, when Sarah explains the things that Riley has said, he understands that there is something else going on there that he is not aware of, and he has been played just like he knows he's been lying to her. And I'm sure he's going back through every single interaction, every scenario, every episode, everything we've seen on camera, everything they did off camera, and questioning all of it, and probably even wondering, do you even care about me? So, of course, he's going to take that seriously.
Yes. And there's a moment where John asks Cameron, are there things future John knows that you don't know, right? Like, and she clarifies, do you mean are there things that future John didn't tell me, right?
Right.
I can't help but wonder if he's trying to dig out in that moment anything about Riley that future John may have given insight to.
Sure, yeah.
Is kind of what comes to mind. Like he's just wishing he had a way to like clarify what am I supposed to do in this moment with this information, you know? But for all we know, I mean, the future that Cameron is from with that future John, Riley didn't exist for all we know. So there's that also.
Well, also he's probably trying to fish for information about if Riley existed in his past at all, which would either confirm or deny the fact that she is from the present. And, you know, if her version of future John had that information about Riley, he might have felt a little more at ease with the fact that, oh, she's probably from my time then. But
yes,
because there's no information, he's still unsure. And that's a really hard place for anyone to be, let alone a teenager with the weight of the world on his shoulders.
Right. And he can't even ask Cameron about it directly because that would be exposing what Riley knows, and he's afraid of Cameron making a decision
right
to protect him and Sarah.
Right, which ironically is now a decision instead of
yes.
just a reaction.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of really great stuff about this episode. I don't think that there's any scene that feels out of place. I don't think there's any moment that feels unnecessary. I think it feels very intense. I think it really... it doesn't alleviate any of the tension. The tension just kind of builds and builds. And when you get to the end, you know, when Riley leaves and dies, you're like, oh, well, maybe I'll feel relieved one way or another now that she's dead, but it makes it worse. And then you have John still dealing with all the stuff about Cameron, and only to see, oh, she's not fixed. There's something still wrong. And yeah, it's good. It's a good one. It's definitely higher up on my list than I remember it being.
Yeah, I'm a fan. I think it's one of the certainly one of the better of this season. And I'm excited to talk about the episode that follows because I feel like it kind of completes the arc.
Yes.
So.
It's kind of this episode's kind of the beginning of a trilogy a little bit. Then because the next two episodes it's you know it's a two-parter and all of that and it directly correlates to and follows this episode. This all episode is also kind of the end of the Sarah Three Dots arc. And what I love about it is it references what happened, but not in a way that matters, and it lets it go because there's more pressing things to deal with. And I think that's the perfect way to handle an arc like that.
I agree.
So, Tanner, did you have any other final thoughts on Ourselves Alone?
That's everything I had for that episode. If there's anything extra, as always, please let us know what your thoughts were on the episode. We'd love to respond to what you guys have to think.
Yeah, absolutely. Like we said at the beginning, guys, this is going to be our last episode covering the Sarah Connor Chronicles for a little bit. We hopefully won't be gone super long. We're not going to put a time limit on it just because, you know, we're going to be dealing with a bunch of family stuff in the coming months, and we're really excited about. You know, it's not a bad thing. It's a really good thing. We're very excited. It's just going to take up so much of our time, and so we want to give you guys the time that you deserve, and in order to do that, we need to take some time to ourselves in order to prepare. So we're excited to come back and talk about Today is the Day Part 1 pretty soon, hopefully, well, like I said, we're not going to give it a time limit. But until
We'll be
then,
back.
yes, we will be back. But until then, guys, you can listen to our entire catalog of episodes back on our website, nofatepodcast.com. We did switch over podcast providers recently from Libsyn to Anchor, which means that a lot of our old episode links have been broken. So we are in the process still of fixing those. Bear with us through that. If you want to listen to all of our episodes directly from Anchor's website, you can go to anchor.fm/no-fate-terminator, where you can go back and revisit every episode from the first to the present. Again, we really appreciate you guys. Thank you so much for all that you do. Thank you for listening. And until next time.
If you're listening to this, you are the resistance. Doo-doo-doo.